All right. Good evening, or actually good afternoon. This is kind of a different change for us for on Common Grounds podcast. We usually do it on Thursday night, but we're having a little bit of time change because of our guest. Our guest today is Adrian from the Scandinavian Alps Coffee Roasting Company, located in Norway. So it's really, really cool. We've never got to, haven't had the opportunity to interview anybody on the European theater of operations in the coffee industry. So we're super excited about that. And we'll just go ahead and cut to the chase, roll our music and get the show started. So thanks for tuning in. If you're on Facebook or YouTube or listening down the road on the Common Grounds podcast. And let's start the show with a little Dom Coors. All right. Good evening, Adrian. How are you tonight?
Great. Thanks. How are you, Chris?
Pretty good. What's the weather like over there right now in Norway? And where are you located in Norway? Tell us a little bit about it.
We're located in Hemsedal, Norway. So it's pretty much, have you been to Norway?
No.
No. Oslo is the main city. No, yeah, exactly. Oslo, and then the next city, main city on the coast is Bergen. So we're kind of straight in the middle of those two cities. So maybe 3 hours from Oslo, and about, I think it's like 6 from Bergen. It's kind of like the smaller version of the Canadian Rockies. So weather-wise, we just kicked into fall here. So yeah, what about you? What's the weather like there?
Today's cooler. It's in the upper 80s. It's maybe 86 outside. There's part of a cold front coming our way, so it's been kind of rainy and weird. You know, half the state's in the 60s and half the state's still in summer down here in our part. So it's interesting.
Okay. 80s. What's that in Celsius? Everyone works in Celsius, so I don't know what's Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
That's like 20, 25.
Hold on. I'll tell you.
It sounds pretty warm.
Let's see. We're 86, 30 degrees Celsius.
Yeah. Oh, so it's hot.
It's a nice day. It's actually cooler than it's been. So it's not that bad, but it's not too hot for coffee. I actually just made a really nice Nicaraguan. And that's what we're really here to talk about. So how we usually start the show, I know you've listened, you're my number one fan in Norway. So congratulations. You hold that title, and I appreciate you listening to the podcast and taking the time out of your evening to come on. But tell everybody a little bit about where you're from, how you got into coffee roasting.
Where I'm from, I'm Canadian by trade. Grew up in Toronto, Canada. For downtown. So I was, I was a city guy. My parents are actually expats. So they're English. So I'm kind of half Canadian, half British, I guess, which has been good because I've got a British passport, which was good actually up till maybe this year. And then who knows? But it's pretty handy if I want to live in the EU, so which I am doing now. You know, probably like yourself, Chris, you know, Canada's a pretty chill place. So we, you know, have one brother, 18 months apart, went to school, public school. And then I went to actually a boarding school after grade 7, just because my brother and I have dyslexia. So we have a bit of some learning disability. So I think my parents thought it was better to go to a school somewhere where it has smaller groups, smaller classes.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So we were pretty lucky to go to a school. Yeah, it's basically like university with just more rules. But that was fun. It was out in the country too. So I kind of, I was born in the city, but kind of fell in love with the country after 7 years there, which kind of made my decision easy to go to a smaller university. And I studied in Quebec, which is kind of cool experience. They had a golf course. I think that's why I chose the university. Not that I'm good at golf, but it kind of says the whole theme about the place. So yeah, you know, went to camp as a kid, you know, like just regular kid stuff. I'm sure you did the same. Did you go to camp as a kid?
No, we camped out, but we never had any like official camps that I went to as a kid. How did you get into skiing? Because, you know, I've checked out your website and I know you're a ski instructor as well. And that's really, and you've got buddies that are pretty famous skiers from Norway that drop into the shop every once in a while. How did you get into skiing? Is it something you picked up in Canada or is that something you picked up once you got to Norway?
No, that's a good question. And then I think that ties into like where I'm from, which is kind of a big question. It's not just Toronto. I've lived, like after university, I lived in the Rockies up in Banff, Alberta, for many years. And that's kind of where I worked at a ski resort. Cause you know, you finish university, you don't really know what you want to do with life or with your life. So I kind of, worked at a ski resort cause I was like, a free ski pass. That sounds pretty good. Worked in the daycare, which was, I think I was only two guys and the rest were girls, or, well, I like to call myself a child technician. I think we're refer ourselves to. And then I kind of got into just meeting ski instructors up there riding the gondola, and I was like, hey, this sounds like a great job, I should do this. And then you take a few ski courses. The first one I actually failed, which was a bit of a humbling experience because I thought I was a good skier, but really I wasn't. So you kind of have four levels in ski instructing, which is I think the same in the US. I think it's 1, 2, 3. You just ski, train, teach. Probably taught a lot of bad lessons to start off too, but you know, kind of like coffee roasting, you're gonna have to roast a whole bunch of bad coffee before you roast a bunch of good coffee. So and then I decided I got opportunity to go travel with that job. It's an amazing job to see the world. So I went to Japan and Australia, New Zealand, places where most people haven't, like Australia, most people don't even know you can ski down there. But it's actually really good skiing, really good partying, and all the great, you know, all the U.S. or Canadian World Cup skiers all go down there and train in the off season. So yeah, and then Sweden. I met my wife actually down in Australia when I was there. And then we moved to Sweden. So I've kind of lived everywhere. I've lived a bit of everywhere and tasted coffee from everywhere. So yeah.
And where did you pick that up? Where did you really come into the specialty coffee scene at?
That's a tough one. I think it was through traveling. I think that I can still remember the cups I had in New Zealand. Like the coffee down there is just, it's a totally new world of drinking coffee compared to Canada and, you know, in the States where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, like the coffee was pretty, it was like probably what drank, which is just tastes like dirty cigarettes and a cigar or something and hot water. The coffee, like they just, you know, they put so much more passion and love into the coffee there down and roasting it. And same with Japan too. Like just tasting such, it just tasted totally different, the coffee down there. Espresso drinks tasted sweeter and there was some complexity there as opposed to just tasting bitterness and ashy notes. So kind of got a taste of it there because I didn't really like coffee. I didn't like coffee till 25. When did you like coffee or start? Did you drink it all?
Well, I've been drinking coffee for a long time, but really, I guess probably 2009, I was deployed to Iraq and I got sent a giant, there was probably 40 different bags of coffee in it it was mostly Starbucks, but it was still like, you know, their Komodo Dragon or their Sumatran or their Blonde. It was a variety of coffee. And then I was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool. And Of course, it was old by the time I got it, and ground, so it wasn't that good of quality coffee. But then when I got back to the States, I started buying whole bean and grinding it myself, yeah. and experimenting. But it's only been really in the last year that I've really delved into specialty coffee as hardcore as I am. And, you know, I've probably got 14 different roasts in the house right now from 7 different roasters, and just I'm like trying to drink it before it gets to I walk outside and hand out free coffee to people that are passing me on the street, you know. It's like here,
so you're the coffee guy now there.
yeah my postman actually tries to catch me off guard every once in a while. He's like, hey, there's coffee in the mailbox. I'm like, yeah, you want a bag? You know, and I'll hand him off a bag. But it's a fun experience. Nice. You know, there's so much to learn about coffee, and there's so many different flavors and experiences that you can get in a cup just by brewing it differently. And that's what I think is the fun part. And so you fell in love with coffee, with good coffee. And how did you translate? Did you just one day wake up and be like, I'm going to be a roaster?
Yeah, no, I think it came down. It's hard to say. I think I liked, I didn't really know much about specialty coffee. I just knew I liked coffee from those countries except Canada. So when I came back to Canada, it just tasted awful again. I was actually grew up drinking a lot of tea because my parents are British. So it's only when I kind of, I think when I was living in Norway, no, was it before? I think my dad took me down to a place that actually roasted their own coffee. You could go and buy green coffee and roast it, and they had like a club, and it tasted really good. I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, why isn't there more of this in the world? And it was fairly new in Toronto at the time too. And then I moved to Europe. So, you know, the Kiwis and the Australians have kind of branched out into London. That was their first kind of dominant place to take over specialty coffee. So I was living there too in London, and fell in love with it there. And then it's only when I moved to Norway, I guess, a friend of mine, his parents have a coffee shop in Banff, or a few coffee shops. And he took me, we went down to Tim Wendables. You've heard of Tim Wendables, yeah?
No.
It's in Oslo. Okay, so he's kind of like, are you a football guy? American football?
No, not really. Nope.
No? What sports do you play, Chris?
What sports do I play? I have a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, so I run after them most of the time. But I'm more into the shooting sports, so pistol comps, stuff like that. That's what I grew up doing, was hunting and fishing and that side of it. I never did football or soccer or any of that stuff growing up.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you could still call Tim Wendable like the Rambo of specialty coffee. Or, you know, he's one of those guys that you'll run into him. He's kind of one of the leaders of pushing modern coffee to the world. So he's in Oslo, and there's a whole bunch of other roasters there. Like, Oslo is kind of this mini center of modern coffee, if you will. So, yeah, definitely check out some of the roasters there. Like, there's Fuglen, and I think they're Japanese, too. There's a whole bunch, but anyways, I went down there with him and tasted some coffees, and they were just like, yeah, they didn't taste like coffee. Like one, like fruity and vibrant acidity, and like one even had like a tomato, you know, like roasted tomatoes in it. It was crazy. Like, and I did not like them. I was like, this is way too. I'm sure you're the same when you first tried some of those wild ones. Like, you didn't like them. I was way, you know. But then the more you drink them, you kind of start to, you go on that journey or that path, just like beer, trying those, you know, wild hoppy IPAs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I started to kind of dig them, you know, especially in the afternoon. Like you've drank your familiar, you know, nice Colombian or Guatemalan, and then the afternoon, yeah, let's chuck in an African, Ethiopian or Kenyan. And, but it took a while. Like I think it took me about 2 years. My wife and I 2 years to start to enjoy those kind of unique coffee, especially the naturals. And but yeah, that's kind of where I got into it. And then deciding to roast, geez, that's a, I think I've been skiing for 20 years or teaching for 20. It was time to move on and do new challenges in life. And I've always wanted to start my own company. So that was a goal. And I thought, I love coffee. I love the community and the connection, like you and I, you know, you're in Houston, I'm in Norway, and there's a call being had right now. So it's kind of cool. So yeah, probably like you know, just started roasting coffee. I got some green coffee in a frying pan. Did you try that one yet?
No, I haven't messed with it. I know better to do stuff that I know I'm going to get really hooked on, because it just leads me down the road of no return.
Yeah, like you can do it in the frying pan like they do in Ethiopia. Like that's the most traditional way. Yeah, it's quite smoky, so you might want to do it outside, which I didn't, which I don't think my wife was too happy when she came home and I smoked out the whole house. And then I got the old school air popcorn machine at a Lopez, we call that here, which is like a flea market and where you guys are. So yeah, that was cool, but you know, the coffee was like super burnt, but it still tasted quite, you know, like it was quite a pride, you know, prideful moment. Like, yes, I roasted my own coffee. And then it was, yeah, just one decision. I think one guy at the ski school was like, I need a present. Can you roast some coffee more for my parents? And I was like, okay. So technically he was my first customer. I think it took me a good hour to roast the coffee in batches of like 25 grams or something ridiculous. So yeah, and then I made the decision like to get serious. It wasn't a hobby. Let's buy a roaster, find a place, make a business plan. And here we are 4 years later. So coming up to 5 years in May. Is it May? Yeah. So pretty crazy.
And you do online sales and you do international online sales. I saw that on your website. Do you ship mostly? Is that mostly in the EU, or do you get some on this side of the Atlantic a little bit?
Hello?
I think, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. You good?
Back. We're back? Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you're good.
Where did we pause there? Or did we freeze?
No, I just lost you for a minute, I guess. The question I said was, you ship, so you do mail order. People can order coffee off your website, and you ship all over the EU. Do you ship to Canada and the US?
Yes. Yeah, we shipped to, sent some to Japan the other day, which was pretty cool. Northern Japan. I sent it to Houston. No, not Houston. West Coast, yeah, Portland. I've sent some out there, Vancouver. So, yeah, we ship everywhere, yeah.
And then do you have any, what are your local sales look like? And this is, you know, this is kind of like the business aspect of it. Does it look like the same model that we have over here in the States? Do you have a couple of wholesale accounts? Are you able to get into some stores over there? Is that how it works?
I think, yeah, business is business. You know, as a bootstrapping roastery, you know, on a bootstrapping budget, and I'm sure you could, we all know, like, you're just trying to find customers. But I think it's not, don't find customers for your product, but find products for your customers. You know what I mean? Like, if it took me, I mean, I bought a roaster that wasn't like a big commercial one, just because I wanted to roast a lot of coffee. And it's the same with getting better at skiing or anything, right? Like shooting, you need to shoot a lot or ski a lot and roast a lot of coffee to get good. So it took me like 2 years before I was actually like happy with the quality of the product. And yeah, we had a few wholesale accounts, like the hairdresser, our local hairdressers, they drink quite a bit of coffee. So they supported me. And some of the local cafes came on. And then eventually I got like the grocery store in town here, which was, that was quite a big account, because I think it's the biggest, one of the biggest grocery stores in all of Norway. It was one of the busiest. So that was good. And then web orders kind of started floating in. It's not just going to happen all at once. You kind of have to work at it in terms of, you know, making the website look presentable and, you know, marketing and, good customer service. You know, when a customer comes in, it's like you're getting married to them, or at least I think I want to get married to them in terms of, you know, like, let's have a conversation. And it's not just about selling something. It's about, you know, making sure they're happy and that you're adding value there. So, I guess the web sales, wholesale, and then, some farmers markets and stuff we're starting to get into now. But I just don't have time. I've got a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So how old are your kids?
5 and 3. So yeah.
Okay, so we're we're in the same pain right now.
Yeah. I'm just waiting for one of them to come busting in here because mom's on a conference call downstairs in her office, and the other one's playing a xylophone in the playroom. It's a lot of fun.
I was watching one of your episodes of one of your, I think it was your daughter came in, and then it kind of had that did you remember seeing that BBC interview with the guy, and he's talking, and then I think his wife comes in, his kids are like rushing around. And I had that kind of deja vu. So,
that's normal now. You know, everybody, at least in the States, I don't know how much y'all were affected by the whole COVID crisis, but you know, everybody's working from home now. There's companies in the States that will probably never go back to work in an office environment just because, you know, they've got good employees and they're performing better at home. So why have the overhead of an office? You know, it's going to be interesting to see where we end up commercial real estate wise in the next 3 or 4 years here. But
I really feel sorry for all those businesses that rely on all those, you know, business commuters that are, you know, going out for lunch and stuff. I really feel like it must be really tough if you've got high rent in those, you know, those commercial spaces. So it's, I was talking to a friend in Toronto, and he works down at the banking center of Toronto. And he was saying like, he's working at home. He's going to be working from home till next, 2021 May, I think he said. So it's not good. It's not good.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, like, I think COVID's, like, we're a small town, so it's a big tourist town, it's a big ski town. So, it's hard in terms of they had to shut early. Like, all ski resorts all over the world had to close early. So, and then, you know, it was right at spring break or Easter holiday. So that was that's a big revenue a couple of weeks for all businesses in town. So it was quite hard. Especially if you're a restaurant, right? Because that's your only, you know. But I think it's been a busy summer here in Norway, so especially up here, and so a lot of people are staying in Norway. So those businesses have come back with good sales over the last couple of months. So, what about you guys? Is it hit hard there?
It's been weird. You know, Houston had a lot of cases. But not like an astronomical amount of deaths, thankfully. I think our county, you know, we're almost 1 million in population in the county, and there are 600 or 700 deaths, I think, at the most out of it. But everything's been on lockdown, and there's, you know, businesses have just went under and lost everything because they weren't opened. And then we opened back up a little while, and they shut everything back down. And it's just been a lot of the restaurant industry, you know, a lot of the bars and stuff had to adapt because they're like, okay, restaurants can be open, but bars can't. And so now you've got all these bars and these food truck parks and everything, like, hustling to get their license to sell alcohol fixed to where they sell alcohol and food. And so there's a lot of people being creative on how to make ends meet and how to keep their businesses alive through all of this. You know, we had a couple roasters of mine, you know, they were small enough to where they were fixing to open a cafe. Like, they were going to open up a cafe April 1st, and they're like, let's not open yet. So they didn't have to hire anybody. Yeah. They didn't have the overhead of trying to operate in a reduced, you know, income environment. So it's been weird. Web sales have been up. You know, that's good for that side of the house.
Yeah, ours went up 600% in May. Awesome. I was blown away. So that was there's some support there, you know, because people are just staying at home. So I guess people are shopping more online. But did you have good sales for the summer?
Yeah, I had good sales up until August when it started, or up until August, July and August when it got really, really hot. And a lot of stuff kind of started opening back up, and then it dipped a little bit. But we're on track right now to have the best month yet in September. So as it cools off, I hope to see that help out. Let me go ahead. I've got a couple more questions that are coffee specific. I wanted to ask you about where you're at. So we know how the coffee chain works in the States. Yeah, where are you able to get green coffee at where you're at? Is there an importer there in Oslo that you work with?
Yeah, we're really lucky to have some of the best green importing businesses around the world in Oslo. So they have Nordic Approach, which is a big one. I think a lot of the U.S. specialty roasters use them. And there's Collaborative Coffee Sources, which we've used the last couple of years, and they get some amazing coffees. Like, they just blow you away. I started using Cafe Imports too, which they're pretty international, I think. They have great service and a great selection of coffees. I think that was at the beginning. It was, you know, no one was really sending me emails like, hey, we're, you know, we want to do business with you. But now, after a couple of years, when people start to hear your name, I'm getting like farmers emailing me and small importing companies. And we're pretty lucky here in Europe because, you know, it's got some big ports too in terms of coffee coming into Germany and Holland and the UK. So it's, we've got a really good selection of coffee. So we're pretty spoiled in that regards.
Now, I was having a discussion with one of my roasters the other day. Do you go pick up your coffee, or do you have it delivered to your shop at this point?
That's a great question. I think when I first 2 years, I used to drive down to Oslo, and it's a 3.5 hour drive. Drive there, go cup with the importing company. So they put on a cupping, which is really cool. Starting out, it's really good to taste a lot of coffee just to find out what you like and what you think your customers are going to like. So I used to drive down, pick up, you know, 6-7 bags, whatever I could fit in the car, in the Volvo, and then literally drive back. So it was like it was a full day with some tasting and maybe a bit of food in there, so for lunch. That's one of the downfalls, I think, or it's one of the tough parts of the business being so far out in the mountains is shipping is getting very expensive, sending and receiving. So, if you order like a full pallet of coffee, it ends up being reasonable shipping. If you're ordering less than 6 bags, the shipping, you know, it adds up quick.
Very quick.
We do a bit of both. I mean, if there's a cupping what used to be a coffee event before COVID, I would drive down and try and, you know, meet some other roasters and just learn. I think that's key too, for people starting out. You've got to get out there and meet other roasters that have been doing it longer than you. So that's what I would try and do. I'd make it a learning experience, also a tasting experience, and also pick up some great green coffees that, you know, that were on.
What would you say, describe, like, I always see in different coffee groups, especially if there's a lot of international people in the coffee groups, they talk about Nordic roasted coffee. So tell me a little bit about Nordic roasted coffee. And is that even... Is it more of a marketing term, or is it an actual technique?
That's a great question, and it's a big answer. I think I'll try and keep it simple, but I think the Nordic, if Scandinavian countries tend to like more acidic foods, so their breads and you know, everything's pickled because, you know, Vikings to store stuff over winters, they had to pickle it, or, you know, some sort of acidity to keep the breads not from everything staling. So they're kind of, the palate they're used to is a more acidic things. So that, you know, coffee is no different. where did it come from? Or it is a Nordic thing though, for sure. Like if you look at all these, like Tim Wendable, like I said, I mentioned who's these, all these roasters who started off, Kaffa is another big roastery. They all started roasting later. The quality of the coffee got so much better. So they wanted a clean, you know, looking for sweetness, cleanness, a vibrant, bright acidities. And, you know, they didn't want those. Is your daughter there?
Yeah. Yeah. She keeps on, she's popping. She's got some packing bubbles that she's popping in the other room. And she keeps on telling me that she's popping bubbles. So.
Okay. But, it's definitely a trend that started here, because if you talk to any roasters who are doing lighter roast coffees, I'm sure they've done some sort of research on the Nordic countries doing this, and it kind of all started here. Some of it good, some of it bad. Like I think the first, from what I heard, I didn't drink it really back then, but it was a lot of underdeveloped coffee, you know, like those tastes of grassiness and maybe just too acidic, right? Like battery acid kind of, which is not pleasant to drink. So I think that hard on the brewer too, like people brewing coffee. If you don't know how to brew the coffee, then it's not going to be good, you know? And I think I fell into that too, like not hot enough water, or my recipe was off, and then the coffee was sour. No one likes sour coffee. I mean, so I can see why most of the world roasted about a bit darker, because it's easier to brew. But if you brew it right, you know, this is that you get the most, it's like a whole new world of coffee, you know, moving from your regular Coors Light beer to your IPAs of, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's moving to like a whole new world of beer, which everyone, you know, most people like, you know, a Guinness or an IPA or a pale. And like, so all those beer drinkers out there that just drink, you know, Coors or Bud Light, whatever it is, like, yeah, you're missing out big time.
Yeah. You know, hold on just a second. She comes in with this whole roll of bubble wrap that she wants to pop them in here. I'm like, no, I'm recording.
Just no, I want to say hi. But I told you I was a child technician.
Yeah, well, she's technically, all she has on is bubble wrap at this point. She's wrapped in some bubble wrap. She's, her clothes have disappeared at some point. So we're going to keep her off.
Get her on
for right now.
Get her on. It could be a commercial break or something.
When you're talking about, you know, relating really good coffee to really good beer, or really good beer, or really good scotch, or really good whiskey, there's so much that really good coffee has in common with those things that have really complex palates, and you've got to kind of know how to serve it. You know, you've got to kind of know how to prepare it. You know, if it's, you know, a Guinness isn't necessarily the best beer to drink ice cold. You know, I like it a little bit on the more traditional warmer side of the serving. Or, you know, whiskey, is it supposed to be on the rocks? Is it supposed to be room temperature? There's so much stuff that goes into the nuances of those flavors that apply to coffee as well. And I think it's one of the coolest things to be able to take one roast of the same bean from the same roaster and brew it three different ways. And you get the underlying, you get the underlying notes kind of the same, but maybe that Chemex pulls out like a sweetness, or maybe there's just a richness that you get out of a Kalita Wave that you don't get from a V60, or doing a French press. There's way more oils involved in that, and then you get that aspect of those flavor tones. You know, it's more chewy. There's a bigger body to it. And I think that's one of the coolest parts about coffee, is that you could do so much with some brown beans, man, you know?
Yeah. I totally agree. Like most people think the magic is in the machine. Like you buy the most expensive machine, you're going to have the most amazing coffee, but we all know that it's about the ingredients. So if you buy great fresh roasted coffee, and you know, if you go to, you know, anywhere, like even if you went to Italy in relation to food, like, or anywhere where you know, they've cooked something so humble in such a like simple way, but it tastes amazing, right? You know, but it's the produce, like Italy, like the food is amazing there, but it's not just because their frying pans are better. It's because they have the freshest tomatoes and they've made the pasta. And so it's no different with coffee. Like you could have some crappy old French press mocha pot that's, you know, and if you had fresh coffee, it's going to taste amazing. It'll taste 10 times better than stale coffee with a big fancy machine. So it's, yeah.
Do you find that that's an interesting question because, or interesting point that you made? Do you find, what is your perfect time frame off of roast for you to get that cup? Like, whatever your current favorite roast, is it best
singing
3 days or 7 days or 2 weeks? What do you, how do you see your coffee as it ages?
That's a good question. I think when I first started roasting, I just loved fresh coffee the day after, you know, it's so good, even if it has in it. But, I think now after a couple of years doing it, I'd say, yeah, 3-4 days, it starts to just kind of start to sing, and then it gets better, better for those next, that next week. And then, yeah, by then it starts to, it also depends how you store the coffee too.
Yeah.
And how light or dark roasted. We usually just do, like, we're all about light roasted coffees here now. Hey, there she is. Hey.
Just wave. Can you wave?
She's, where's the bubble wrap?
She's, the bubble wrap's gone, but I've got the camera up high enough. I think we're good.
Here, nice. Here I love this podcast, Chris. Keep it real. Keep it real.
Thanks. Hey, that's what I get a lot of comments on it. Everybody's like, you know, I love the fact that your kids just run in, and I'm like, well, I'm glad you do, because it's going to happen.
Keep it fun. You know, that's what coffee's about.
Yeah. That's what it should be about. There's a lot more. There's a lot of people that think it should be a lot more serious than it is, but I think it's more.
No.
When you keep it laid back.
What about you? Where do you like your coffee after roast?
You know, typically that 7 day mark, once I get it in, you can really tell. Like, I got a bag of coffee in today from a roaster in Houston. So it was roasted yesterday. And I was like, okay, cool. I'll see you in a couple days. I'll wait 3 or 4 days before I even open it, just to let it degas, let it get ready. Because you go to try to make that into anything, and all you're going to do is get a bunch of bubbles and a bunch of CO2 getting blown off of it, you know? But I think that 7 day off of roast is just, depending on what it is perfect. But I've had some roasts that I wasn't able to finish a bag, and I put it in a jar and set it in the cabinet, and came back to it. And I mean, it might not be as aromatic. It might not have as good a smell, or the flavor might not last as long as you drink it, but it's still good. It's still super good. Mm-hmm. Even if I have something that's 3 months old downstairs, it's still fresher than it is at the grocery store.
That's so true. I think even when I was first roasting, I knew I was roasting a lot of bad coffee, but I myself, even though it's bad or it's been not maybe the best craft roasted, it's still better than anything out there. Do you know what I mean? Like the fresh is king, you know, and you can't really
I highly encourage, you know, most of our listeners are roasters, but I'm on my my personal Facebook, and I keep on always telling people, you know, grab that if you're at the farmer's market on the weekend, or you're wherever, and you can actually talk to the person that's roasting your coffee, get a bag and try it, because, you know, there's if you can afford that $15 bag of coffee for a week, you're going to have such better coffee every day that when you wake up in the morning, and if that's your first thing you're doing, you're going to have a good day.
It's a game changer. It's a game changer. Yeah. Like your day just starts off. It changed my life, actually. Do you know what I mean? Like every day I wake up and I'm just so grateful for I'm so blessed for drinking such great coffee. And then you're doing it and you're with your kids, and it's just like, there's nothing better than that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, plus you can't, you know, I say it before on here, but you can't pour a shot at 6 o'clock in the morning of a craft whiskey. You can, but
I guess you can. I guess you'd be referred to as an alcoholic, but yeah, why not? But you know, I think if for people, like if you have listeners that are buying specialty coffee or fresh roasted coffee, I recommend just taste it every day. Doesn't matter if it's roasted yesterday. The cool thing is just to taste every day and see where it goes and then where it doesn't go. I think that's kind of a cool experiment to do at home. Because most of the time when we do our QC, I'll roast coffee and then 20, if I have to send it out, I'll cup it the next day. I mean, usually it's better to let, you know, 3 days after, 2 days. I don't know, when do most roasters that you've talked to cup their coffee after?
Oh, it all depends. You know, I've got roasters that they'll cup it every couple of days after. You know, they'll cup 3 days. They'll save some of the roast and try it later, especially if they're on a smaller machine or if it's a new roast. Those guys that I've got who are more established and, you know, they're roasting, you know, bags of it, you know, they're roasting like 20 or 30 kilos a day of a certain roast. They know it. And as long as it's hitting everything on the time and the temps, you know, they might try it every once in a while. I know Tim from Evansville, he takes and sets samples back, and then it's like he'll go and sample one after 60 days. Okay, this was this day's roast 60 days later. Okay, what's the next one? 90, you know, trying to see where at that point it really, really falls off. And he's had some really good luck with the nitrogen flushing the bags and stuff. And, you know, says he's got some really, really good coffee, even, you know, 3 to 6 months down the road if you do it right and store it properly.
Yeah, definitely. I think storage is kind of a new topic in the coffee world, or at least I've seen with coffee canisters coming out with, we've got the Fellow one. We might get, we do got a test one in it. I love it. It's great. Have you seen that? The one you've kind of, twist it and then push a little button. It's got that little noise. So there's part of that kind of ritual in the morning. And I've included that of like keeping the coffee super fresh. But those canisters are, I think, a game changer too for keeping coffee fresher and just little things like that. Out of light and not filling up your bean hopper the whole way, right? Just because.
Oh, yeah. Just dosing it. I'm really looking forward. I want that new Fellow Ode grinder.
Yeah, expensive. But it looks very cool.
Very cool. Because that's what we do. I grind, you know, 30 grams a time. I grind 40 grams at a time. You know, 20, I might do 20 for something. If I'm just making one little cup, you know, I'll do a 20 gram dose and grind that and just brew that up. But everything gets put in a jar and put away in the cupboard after I open it. Or if it's in a bag, you know, it just stays sealed in a bag. Those are just props behind me. These are just, hold on. I'm going to relay.
Your daughter to play with?
Yeah, no, there's just pinto beans.
Oh, nice. You need to put the what your daughter's playing with. So you could just put the leftover in there.
Yeah. Well, we're good.
The bubble tape.
The bubble wrap. Yeah, she's going to start.
The bubble wrap. Just put that in there. Yeah. But what about, Chris, talk to me, what's your brew method of choice? How do you brew your coffee in the morning?
In the morning, I'll do a clever dripper for myself. And I do an AeroPress with a Prismo attachment. For the wife. Yeah. So the wife likes an Americano basically in the morning. So I'll do an Americano for her and I'll get everything going in my clever and just set that, let it brew for 4 minutes and pop it on my top. You know, if I remember about it, I'll hit 4 minutes and put it on my mug. But I love that little thing. You know, you can get really, really good coffee with very little effort out of a clever dripper. And, it just was a game changer for the morning instead of sitting there and trying to do it. It's like, okay, I've got 700 things going on, but let me do six
with the
circles.
5-year-old and the 3-year-old coming at you.
Yeah. So I usually do a pour over in the afternoon of some sort. You know, I rotate it out. I've got a bunch of different pour overs. I'm a junkie when it comes to little gizmos and stuff. So I'm always like trying to buy the next little pour over to see how it does and see what it looks like on Instagram and everything. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to get into. What about you? What's your favorite method of brewing?
That's a good question. I think it would be V60 is the ultimate. Like if you want to extract coffee to its that for filter coffee. That's lovely. I got an espresso machine, a Rocket, last year, and that's great if you want, you know, a nice flat white in the morning. It's quite nice, but these days I don't have much time. Maybe when I roll, you know, come home, I can turn on the machine and try and make one without my kids running at me. I guess, yeah, V60, AeroPress, you know, Chemex. I kind of fell in love with the Chemex again. So, yeah, it's hard to say. They're all lovely ways to brew coffee. Is she back again?
Yes.
More bubble tape?
No.
Let's just start bubbling it. I want to hear
her. She comes in and she goes, I love you. She's whispering, I love you.
You're like, I love you. You say, make me a coffee. Can she make coffee?
She will. She'll learn. She's really good at pancakes at this point. They make pancakes with me all the time. And Rice Krispie treats. Yes, ma'am. You need help? I'll be right back. I'll be entertain everybody on the show.
Okay. Mom.
I'll have to edit that little breakout, but
that's okay. Yeah.
when you are cupping, when you are, let's say you get a new roast in, okay, you get some new green in, and you're profiling that out. Do you ever say, okay, I'm going to develop this green specifically to do a pour over, or do you just develop the roast and then see what happens later?
Do I roast it for the brew method, you mean?
Do you ever do that? You ever, like, I'm just going to make the ultimate V60 roast?
Well, most of our coffees are filtered. I mean, most Norwegians drink filter coffee. So most people don't have an espresso machine just because, they're really expensive. And if you know, the magic's in the grinder anyways. If you want a good espresso, you have to step up and buy a good expensive grinder. So, yeah, most people go out for their espresso drinks. So filter coffee is kind of the big one. So, yeah, I think 90% of what we do is filter coffee. So I already know I'm going to roast for a filter profile. I guess the goal is just to bring out what's there, you know, like it's kind of what probably in Texas, if you've got good beef, you know, you don't need to do too much of it on the barbecue. Just slap it. Its ass and send it out. And then, so yeah, same when I'm profiling, I kind of have a few profiles that you kind of start with, and you're looking for some temperatures to hit. We kind of do fast roasting, light and bright is kind of, like you said, the Nordic style, you know, you want a vibrant cup, nice acidity, but not too much, right? It should be some sweetness to balance out. Just like if you're making it, like I'm really big into cooking. So, you know, just like if you're making a sauce, peppercorn sauce for that steak, you know, you want it to have balance too. So, just trying to, also the origin plays a big part, right? So if it's a Central American coffee and, you know, the importers said the tasting notes are this, you know, I'm trying to search for those because they've been cupping it since it was a pre-shipment sample or even been to origin to the farm. So, trying to bring out what's in there, which is tough, right? Like, cause you're searching for it. I guess a lot of the ways I compare roasting is to skiing, you know, you're trying to find some balance on your skis, you know, all the way down the mountain. So it's a dynamic sport, and roasting is no different. Like it's going to change the coffee. Not day to day, but maybe week to week, depending how you store it. But like the coffees we had in May, you know, they were tasting amazing. They are Ethiopian. We have one called Halu Bereti, which has been a big winner. I think Scott Rayo has been singing his tune on that coffee.
Yeah,
and we have it in the roastery, and it's amazing. It's just super light lemon, like tons of citrus. Some light floral notes, juicy, just lovely, right? And it was tasting amazing, and it still is, but it's just, you know, you can start to, I think, taste your coffees every other day or week by week, you start to see the things change. So you've got to yeah, that profile is going to change no matter what. You can't just, yeah, it's like cooking a steak. You can't cook it the same way every time. Well, you probably could, but you know, depending if you're outdoors cooking it or indoors or.
Yeah, but I mean, the moisture content is changing in the green as it ages if you're storing it properly. So it's going to roast differently. So that's just, you know, part of it. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your, so you've got a fantastic Instagram account. Everybody, I'll put the link.
Thanks.
I put the link up to your website already in the comments. And then while you're talking about different stuff here on the roasting and your marketing side of it, I'll put up the link to your Instagram there. But tell me about your Mountain Rescue Coffee Club. Tell me all about that, because I see it on your website, and then you have a locals only coffee club. So tell me about what you're doing there with that.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we do, it's kind of a product for people like you and other coffee nerds out there who just, yeah, we have two subscriptions. We have the Adventure, so they get a different coffee each month. From a different origin, or it could be a blend. I think we have sometimes a nice fun blend in there. This month is actually a blend. It's the Indian summer blend. So, but usually it's all over the world. So it's a really cool way to kind of to explore coffee and the different flavor notes in coffee. And it's starting to get popular. We only had when I first started, we only had, my neighbor and a few friends. And that, it starts, people start talking and it's starting to grow where I'm roasting more and more each month. And then we have the Heritage subscription, which is for people who just want who like the same cup of coffee each day. And some people do, right? We're not, the best cup of coffee is the one you like. So we're not trying to push anyone to explore,
Yeah,
what they don't want to explore, but it's fun, and I think that's what we're trying to do with coffee here is especially in the mountains where it's quite traditional, the coffee drinking out here. And I'm sure out in the rural parts of Houston, people like their black, thick syrupy cup of coffee each day. Yeah. And that's, I get that. But, coffee doesn't have to be that way. So we do that. And then the locals only is for locals in Hemsedal, or I guess outside the two nearest towns, they can get a kilo of coffee for a little bit better price, just because there's no shipping, because they come and pick it up at the tourist office.
Okay, cool.
So those are they're really cool. And do you guys do that with your online shop? Do you have some sort of service like that?
I don't personally have. Most of my roasters have the ability to deliver locally, and they have programs set up to deliver local. If they don't have it set up, I highly encourage them to do so, because if you set it up right and you take a little bit of time to say, okay, this is the path I need to take through my town, you can deliver a whole bunch of coffee for very little investment other than time and fuel. And it's way cheaper than paying $5 to $7 to ship it across town than it just deliver it. And then, you get local courier services. There's some stuff in the Midwest here that is phenomenal, where you can ship a bag of coffee across the state sometimes for, $2 or $3, which is amazing that you can get it. But, it's all on how creative you can get on to get that package of really fresh coffee to your customer without as much overhead as possible.
Yeah. I still deliver, actually. We like the locals, I'll drive to everyone's house and have a conversation, and there's definitely a connection with the coffee at the forefront. But it's not just about the coffee, there's a connection, and we all we all love just tasting new things. And I think that's the bigger thing, scheme of it. And we also I do the subscription, but we also do more. We try and do coffee tastings. I send out gifts. Like last month we sent out custom made engraved cupping spoons to each member. We're actually joining the world's, have you heard of the world's largest coffee tasting with James Hoffman? Yep. So I bought the kit for that, our club. So our club is going to, whoever can show up on the day, going to do that live with the, I don't know how many people. Last time was 3,500 around the world. So I think this time it's triple.
I might see if I can get it. I have time still to order that Kix. I've got one roaster that's doing it.
It's sold out now.
It's sold out. Yeah, I'm done then.
But talk to your roasters. I'm sure one of them has bought it and you can just join. But super cool, right? Like everyone tasting the same six coffees around the world at the same time. Like that is how cool coffee is getting now, you know, with internet and with even COVID-19. Like this is something like we can do together in a safe way, and hopefully safe way if everyone's cupping right there as a groups, but our group will be for sure. It's just super unique. I think this is kind of a cool thing that's going to be done. So yeah, people haven't checked that out. It's the world largest cupping in the world. I think that's the website too. James Hoffman, check it out. If you can't get on this one, get on the next one, because if you're into coffee, this is something you have to. I did the first one. Did you try the first one, Chris?
No, I didn't do the first one.
Oh, it's so good. It was so much fun. Like and he doesn't tell you what the coffees are. So you're like tasting them and I was like, and then you're trying to guess, and then he's talking live like us on YouTube. It was really cool. I recommend everyone should do it if they're into flavor stuff.
It's definitely a interesting concept that I'm looking into doing some stuff kind of along those lines down
the
road.
Yeah, you should do one, Houston. Yeah,
it's going to be cool. It's going to be really cool. Well, Adrian, I really appreciate you taking time this evening to come on the show and tell us a little bit about. What's up? Cereal. Oh, you need cereal? Oh, somebody's hungry. So
okay, you better go then.
My pumpkin is, or my carriage is turned back into a pumpkin, and I've got to go do the
dad
life.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Hey, thank
you. Thanks for having me. I want to thank all my coffee fans, or like all our partners in the coffee, all my mentors in coffee, which we didn't touch on, but Steve Layton from Hasbean. He actually came to Hempstead to help show me how to roast coffee, and a few other coffee mentors out there, Bjorn R, Robert from CAFA. So like I've been pretty lucky to be helped in the coffee industry. So I just want to send thanks, and I'm really grateful for that. And thanks for you for doing this. It's really cool. I think this is a cool thing you put out there. And
I appreciate it. We really appreciate you coming on the show, and look forward to having you on. We're going to be doing some group stuff later on. That have a few.
Okay. Thank you. We'll have to do part two. Maybe your daughter can interview me.
She's definitely wants to talk.
You tell her I'll bring the bubble wrap next time on my end.
Okay. All right. I'm going to drop you off, but don't get off. Cool. I'm going to talk to you afterwards here. Thanks a lot for coming on the show, Adrian.
Perfect. Thanks, Chris.
Awesome. Everybody tuning in out there. I've got to go. I've got to take care of these little ones running around here, but really appreciate you tuning in today to the live stream with Scandinavian Alps Coffee Roasters and Adrian, and listening to his story on how he got into coffee. If you're listening to the podcast, please give us a review, give us a 5-star review. If you want to give us a 1-star, let us know how we're doing. We really appreciate it. Y'all have a great day, and cheers.